When's the last time you had a medical emergency at your home? Did you know what to do? Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. In the studio with me today, Dr. Benjamin Snap is an assistant professor and assistant emergency medicine residency program director in the Berbye Walsh Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And we'll be talking with him and taking a look at what you can do to prepare for a medical emergency, first aid supplies to have and when to go to the ER and maybe when not to. We'll also take your questions and comments. Maybe you've got some experiences to share as well about a medical emergency that you know about, maybe at your home. Were you prepared for it? Give us your experiences at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Dr. Ben Snap, welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Great to have you with us today. What are some of the common mistakes people make when there's a medical emergency at home?
Well, you know, I mean, I think the biggest one is kind of not being prepared to deal with it at home. You know, I think the number of people who should have first aid kits at home is pretty much everybody. And, you know, I think there are a lot of people out there who probably don't. They kind of find themselves unprepared, thinking that an emergency at home is not something that's going to happen to them. And this is the sort of thing that you're always much happier to be the prepared person for.
Yeah, absolutely. I was trying to think of the last one, visiting in-laws, and the mother-in-law had a little fainting spell and wound up. But, you know, it's a very, you know, when something like that happens, I mean, it's pretty high intensity.
It absolutely can be. And, I mean, I think the other tip that I would recommend to folks for sure is to take a class, first aid, CPR, something like that, so that when these things happen, it doesn't seem quite so overwhelming. And you have the skills to kind of know what to do and the first steps to take, because oftentimes that's all that's needed is just knowing the right direction to go to right off the bat.
Yeah, I can remember. I think we called for an ambulance in that case. And I had an issue with a daughter when she was quite small. She had a breathing problem that developed at night. She was actually starting to turn blue. And, of course, there you really have...
Yeah, those issues with kids can be especially scary. Those are almost the easy ones, though, where you really know that something is going wrong. I think the other mistake that I've sometimes seen people make is they're saying, oh, you know, I don't want to bother the ER with this. You know, I'm not sure if this is an emergency. You know, what I like to tell people is, if it concerns you, it concerns us. And, you know, we'd always rather have you come in and get checked out and be sure rather than sit at home and miss something really big and important.
Yeah, absolutely. Linda in Baraboo has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Linda. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Okay. I may have something that pertains to what you just said, and that is I had some severe chest pain. It appeared to be on the left rib cage as well, and on the left side around the heart. So I ran to the ER, of course, I guess, which was prudent. It just turned out to be something that's not that unusual, which is a virus that can be dormant in the soft tissues of the chest wall. And, you know, I had it on and off for years. I never knew what it was. I finally got it diagnosed. It was not a heart problem. Mm. So how should you make that kind of decision, if you have any comments further on to add to that?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, first of all, I think you absolutely did the right thing. You know, it can be really difficult, if not impossible, to tell when the symptoms that you're having are coming from something dangerous versus, you know, something more benign. And I think, fortunately, in your case, it sounded like it worked out really well, that it didn't end up being something like a heart attack or something more dangerous. But, you know, that's why it's unfortunately somewhat of a tough job in the emergency department sometimes, because because symptoms that seem like one thing can be a sign of something much more serious, and vice versa. You know, I remember a case back in residency where I had a guy who swore up and down that he had a piece of chicken stuck in his throat, and he was having a heart attack. So, you know, these things can run in both directions very easily.
Yeah. And yeah. Women actually have express heart attacks differently from men, as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they can have more of the atypical symptoms. But, you know, if you're having anything that seems out of the norm for you, especially things like chest pain, shortness of breath, you know, dizziness, passing out, we definitely would encourage you to come get checked out.
Yeah. You did the right thing, Linda.
Yeah, if I could also ask, the emergency room offered to keep me overnight to have further tests. They said they couldn't exactly determine, you know, unless they ran a whole cycle of tests. I'm not clear on that, but I opted out because I felt that, you know, it wasn't, the symptoms, according to the ER doctors, seemed just hallmark of this viral type of thing. But in the past, I have had borderline heart enzymes, and a decade ago, I was kept overnight in the hospital because of that. So,
we're losing you, Linda. I'm sorry, your phone's dying on us.
I think I can perhaps speak to some of that. I missed the end of the question, but you know, usually when you come in with chest pain and they're asking you to stay overnight, they're thinking about getting you what's called a stress test, which is basically to put your heart under some exertion and to see how it responds, to see if the blood flow is getting to all of the areas of the heart that it's supposed to, and if it's not, that can be a little bit more concerning. That can suggest that maybe the chest pain that you're having is coming from your heart. But on the other hand, if it looks good, if it looks like the exertion is not reproducing your chest pain and it's not causing any difficulties with blood flow, it can be more reassuring that the chest pain is not coming from your heart. As far as the question of whether you did the right thing by not staying overnight versus staying overnight, you know, this is the sort of thing that we certainly encourage folks who have some risk factors to get at some point. It's not as long as you have a good follow-up with your primary doctor, you know, it's not mandatory that you stay overnight for the tests. However, you know, if you're the sort of person who hasn't seen your primary doctor in 3 years and, you know, when you call them, they tend to tell you the next appointment is 6 months out, yeah, you know, it might be a reasonable thing just in terms of accessing the care to just go ahead and stay overnight in that case.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. Dan in McQuantico, your turn. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Good morning or afternoon. I'm just calling regarding the importance of advance directives. Many people have them, but they're stashed away in a drawer somewhere in the basement or whatever. And when there is a medical emergency and the EMTs that are coming to your door, nobody's going to think about them. So they should be on the refrigerator. And so they have ready access. And in case that you do have a DNR, they need to have that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to endorse that 100%. You know, whatever system you want to have in place to make sure that people are aware of your DNR or whatever your advance directives are, have it in place. Have copies of them, you know, put a copy in your wallet, put a copy on the fridge. Make sure that it's on file with your primary doctor so that it ends up in your medical record. You're right from the standpoint that, you know, we often don't have these things when, you know, people really get into trouble, and you would hate for your wishes not to be followed just because the folks don't have access to the right paperwork.
Can I make one additional comment on that?
Sure.
You know, you mentioned, well, the thing is, one can get a bracelet, a DNR bracelet, that, you know, stays with you all the time. So that might, if it's really important to you, perhaps look it up. I think one can get it through Compassion and Choices.
Yeah. All right. Another good suggestion, Ben. Thank you again for calling. Patty Joe in La Crosse, let's go to you next. Hi, Patty.
Hi there. I have a question about the epidemic of drug overdoses and emergency room visits. And could you talk about perhaps the importance of having Narcan available in households and how one might go about doing that? Can you give some advice, please? Mm-hmm.
Sure. You're right. It's a tremendous scourge that is affecting really the whole country right now. And it is it's a really tough thing to deal with. Certainly, we have access to it. The first responders are increasingly getting access to it so that it can be something that gets to patients as rapidly as it's needed. But I'm actually honestly not sure what the laws in Wisconsin are around getting Narcan in homes. Certainly, if it's something that is a concern and something that you know someone who you love has issues with this type of addiction, then it's certainly something that I would support. To be asking about, to be advocating for, because time is kind of the essence with these sorts of issues. The problem with opiates is that they stop the respiratory drive, and once people stop breathing, they are in trouble very quickly. Yeah. So the sooner they can get access to emergency care or to that Narcan medication, the better.
And Narcan does what?
Narcan basically reverses the effects of opiates. So if somebody has taken too much, it rapidly kind of blocks those receptors and allows them to start breathing again.
Thank you so much for calling, Patty Joe. Appreciate your call. And we have Tom coming up next from Janesville, but tell you what, we're going to take a quick look at the news here next. Dr. Ben Schnapp is an assistant professor and assistant emergency medical residency program director at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine Public Health. Back with him right after the news. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. We are talking about medical emergencies. Are you prepared for one in your home or wherever you happen to be? Larry Mueller here with Dr. Benjamin Schnapp. He is an assistant professor and assistant emergency medicine residency program director in the Berbie Walsh Department of Emergency Medicine, all that at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And maybe you've got an experience to share or a question to ask. I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post a question on our Facebook page. And you know what? We mentioned DNRs and do not resuscitate. Jim from Lake City, Minnesota said, what the heck is DNR? And that's do not resuscitate. In other words, If
God forbid, something does happen to you, how much intervention would you like done? Do you want people pounding on your chest to try and restart your heart? Do you want a breathing tube down your throat and to be on the breathing machines? Some people have really put some thought into this and, have very specific things that they want and don't want. And, it can be hard for your family to make these decisions without your input if you have never expressed anything. So let your family members know and put your thoughts down on paper so that they don't have to kind of make these heart-wrenching decisions without your input.
If you don't have it, the emergency room or wherever you are, those people are going to do everything they possibly can to keep you going.
Our default assumption is that we go kind of all out with every available resuscitative effort, which is not consistent with what some people are really looking for.
Yeah. Now on to Tom in Janesville. Tom, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, and Doctor. Well, I have a question and a quick comment. And the question is about first aid kits. What do you recommend that a person have in a home first aid kit? Call a home first aid kit in the major drugstores amounts to a few Band-Aids and a tuba and a septic cream, and I think probably more should be in there. And the comment is, you can now get a wound powder that like the military uses in the drugstore, but it comes in little tiny packets. It works very well. I know I've had to use it. But if you go to a horse supply company, you can get the same powder in 250 milliliter squeeze bottles. So there you go.
Very interesting. I had no idea of that myself. To speak to your question about the first aid kit, you know, you're right. I think the drugstore kits with, you know, a couple of Band-Aids in them are probably a little on the skimpy side. I think important things from my perspective, pair of gloves so that if something does happen, you can protect yourself. A good bit of gauzes and bandages of different sizes. You want to be able to completely cover a wound if possible. Keep it clean while you're coming in for definitive care in the emergency department and hopefully stop that bleeding. Those would be kind of the most important things. Other things that you might find in there, you know, a little splint would not be a bad thing in there. Some gauze wrap
Tylenol?
Can be nice. Sure, absolutely. You know, that if that ends up in the kit versus, you know, just having some of that at home, I think would be a very reasonable thing.
Yeah. And what about the material that he mentioned for that you can put on a wound?
Yeah, they've got a lot of very interesting stuff coming out these days that I think did have the military as the origin to kind of stop that bleeding. We use a lot of similar things in the emergency department for difficult to stop bleeding, although for the most part, to be honest, you don't really need any of it. Unless you're on blood thinners or have some other reason that your blood doesn't clot, just applying a good amount of direct pressure with that gauze and then elevating the bleeding part above your heart is usually enough to get wounds to stop. I think the big mistake that people will make is to check on the wound too early. They'll be doing a great thing and, you know, having the pressure on, but then they'll just want to take a quick peek and make sure that it stopped bleeding, and then they take the pressure off, it'll start bleeding all over again. So I tell people, once you've put the pressure on, give it a good 10 minutes, which is really good long amount of time before you go peeking at it.
Tom, thanks again for calling. Jason in Dodgeville, it's your turn. Hi, Jason. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Well, thanks for taking it. I had a question, and I guess I kind of missed a little bit of the reason for the program, I guess, but I had a medical question and could also help prepare for a possible future incident. This summer, my son, who is, he was right around, turning 14, I don't believe he had eaten anything all day, and it was right around lunchtime or something, and he had a banana, ate a banana. He and I had a friend over, and they each ate a banana, and wasn't too long after that, my wife came up from doing laundry, and my son was laying on the floor in the hallway, curled up in a ball, kind of in a fetal position, and he had changed colors. His lips were a little bit different color. He was hyperventilating, as it turns out, pretty bad. He couldn't move his fingers. I can't remember all the exact symptoms right off the top of my head, but the what we did is called the ambulance. They came over, and he was still pretty rough when they took him on in the ambulance. They put him in the ambulance. They put the oxygen thing on to test for oxygen, and his oxygen count was like 84 or 87. And by the time they got him to the hospital, he was fine, almost as if nothing happened, because they gave him oxygen, and that seemed to help the situation. Then yesterday, we were at a wrestling tournament, and his friend had been having some problems also. He would get sick sometimes before he wrestled or after he wrestled when he ate. So he wasn't eating too much, but they wanted him, he had to eat something. So he's been eating bananas. Well, yesterday, the only thing he had eaten before he had wrestled was a banana. And it came up with about the same symptoms. He got done wrestling, and a half hour after he wrestled, his heart rate was still near 130. His breathing was odd. He felt sick to his stomach. He couldn't, his fingers had some weird feelings in them and stuff. I just wondered, one thing, is that anything to do with, is it just a coincidence that the bananas were involved, or is there something with potassium or potassium on an empty stomach or anything like that?
You know, it's obviously hard to say for sure, you know, to make a diagnosis from afar these days. You know, things that I think about with kind of what you're describing is things like an allergic reaction, you know, especially with the difficulty breathing, the nausea, vomiting. You know, I'm not sure if he had any kind of itchy skin rash, but that would be the one thing that would really concern me as an emergency physician. And, you know, I guess speaks to a little bit of other things, to medications to consider keeping at home for this kind of situation. Our first go-to for something like this would be some Benadryl. Just regular over-the-counter Benadryl can really rapidly reverse a reaction if somebody is allergic. Not saying 100% that that's what happened here for sure, but it certainly is a consideration. Certainly, bananas are known for having potassium, but I doubt that was what was at play here. Actually, the most dangerous things that will happen with potassium actually are completely undetectable. So it's not necessarily something that they would have symptoms of. And most folks who are healthy, their kidneys do a great job of handling their potassium and keeping that all in balance. There's actually more potassium in a cup of orange juice than there is in a banana. So I wouldn't think of that with the bananas specifically with this.
The only thing that came to my mind was that bananas are one crop that are, if they're not organic bananas, they're often treated with herbicides. And there could be some sort of chemical reaction, the herbicide from handling the skin of the banana.
Yeah, certainly possible.
It's another possibility. There you go, Jason. Thanks so much. When you're for an emergency room, what typically are we going to find in terms of people and helpers and whatnot in an emergency room when you go to one?
The first folks you'll meet will probably be the folks at registration.
Intake people. Yeah.
Exactly. They'll ask you kind of what brings you into the hospital and try and figure out which direction you need to go in the emergency department. Obviously, people who are actively having a heart attack or a stroke right at that moment need to get a room in the back immediately. This is the old kind of chestnut in the emergency department about the longer you're waiting, usually the happier, the better off you are. You should be happy to be waiting in the emergency department because it suggests that your emergency is a little bit less life-threatening. Now, obviously, that starts to break down if you've been waiting there for quite some time on a busy day in the emergency department. But in general, we try and do a triage process that gets the folks to the back that have the most highest acuity issues. You'll meet a triage nurse who will take some vital signs, maybe get an EKG, kind of part of that sorting process of figuring out who needs to go where and what kinds of treatments they need and in what time frame. And then you'll meet usually the team that will be taking care of you in the back. So that would be a doctor. Depending on where you are, you might meet a physician assistant or a resident physician, the nurse in the back that'll be taking care of you. And then, you know, depending on what your needs are, maybe some other physicians as well until they figure out what your treatment plan is.
Hmm. Let's go to Wayne in Osseo next. Let's see if I can find Wayne now.
Hello?
Hi, Wayne. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. Love your show, Larry. Thank you for your time, Dr. Snell. Really appreciate it. Hey, we were playing basketball, and one of the guys got hit in the head with a basketball, and it wasn't like a really hard hit, you know, that just bounced off the rim and hit him, and we went on playing. And after the game, about a half hour, he started to show these symptoms, being disoriented and confused. And, you know, first we kind of questioned his manhood, but it quickly became clear that he was hurt and took him to the emergency room. And here he had a concussion. So question, why would there be a delay like that? And does that happen very often with a head injury? And more importantly, what should have we – did we miss something? He acted fine. He went on playing the game, you know, to us, showed no symptoms or any any sort of injury, but we were thinking later maybe there was something we should have noticed. He was okay. It wasn't a real bad concussion, but
yeah,
still,
that's a good question.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think this is an area of medicine that we're still learning more about. Everything that's going on with the NFL right now and concussions, we're increasingly finding out that these can be much subtler than originally thought and much more damaging than perhaps originally thought. But this is something that, the jury is still out on in a lot of ways in terms of the ideal way to recover, the ideal time frame, and how this all works. Certainly, in hearing your story about the friend playing basketball, I don't hear anything that from what you're saying that overly alarms me either. I'm not sure that any old hit to the head it necessarily puts you at risk for concussion, but certainly the harder that hit is, the higher that risk is. I explain to folks concussion is like a bruise on the brain. You can't necessarily see it if we try and take pictures of it with a CAT scan or an X-ray, but it doesn't mean it's not there, and it doesn't mean that it doesn't affect function. So certainly things like passing out, folks looking dazed or confused, feeling off balance, having problems with the light. Immediately after that injury, you want to take them out of play. You just like they is hopefully being currently done in the NFL. You want to remove the chance of a second hit, because mm-hmm. that's the biggest risk with these concussions is folks getting hit again. That's where a lot of the damage we think seems to be done. As far as what could have been done earlier to diagnose your friend, it's hard to know. I would say to err on the side of caution. Certainly anyone who seems to be having any of those types of symptoms, anything that seems concerning, anybody who passes out, for sure, I would say err on the side of caution and just kind of take them out of any further play. As far as what to do in terms of recovery, certainly getting checked out at your doctor's, either in an emergency department or at your own doctor's, is very reasonable. And we kind of recommend a slow return to normal activity. So whatever doesn't reproduce the symptoms, whether that's just kind of sitting at home and resting or just gentle activity until you start feeling better, It's a different time frame for different folks, unfortunately.
Yeah. You did the right thing, Wayne. I think you guys acted appropriately, and certainly from the sound of it, in that situation. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Jacob in Eau Claire has something for us. Let's go there. Jacob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. First thing I'd like to do is echo what you said earlier about switching to organic bananas. I know more than one person who saw their side effects resolve after switching to organic bananas. But then also, what to add to a first aid kit? I didn't hear you guys say tourniquet, and you can get them maybe find a first aid kit that comes with a tourniquet, or purchase one separately and add it to your first aid kit. Also, I keep bug spray in mind just in case I get stuck somewhere and I'm getting eaten alive. Drinking water, I keep that with my first aid kit in the car. And then an old cell phone. So if you have one of those old Nokia brick phones, the battery lasts a month, you can just turn it off. But keeping it in your first aid kit, you can turn it on, and all cell phones, unless they're totally broken, can call 911 without needing to pay for it. And then maybe an EpiPen. And then I like what someone said, I'm going to look into getting some Narcan for my first aid kit. And another thing I keep in there is the Lifesaver candy. In case I ever run into someone who's having low blood sugar, just remember, cold and clammy, need some candy. They need a quick source of sugars. I also keep a lighter in my first aid kit if for field sterilization or, overnight fire starting if it happens.
Yeah, you're kind of getting into more of like a general emergency kit. I'll certainly endorse some of that for sure. I would put a note of caution, perhaps, on the lifesaver candy. Certainly, you know, cold and clammy needs candy. I kind of like that. I haven't heard that before. But you do want to be careful. You know, if somebody has passed out from their low blood glucose, you do not want to be putting anything into their mouth.
For sure.
Because, you know, that can go down the wrong pipe and cause pretty significant problems for them. So, yes, yeah, certainly, you know, getting folks sugar before they get into that place is very reasonable. Tourniquet is not a bad idea. Now you're getting into some more significant emergencies, but these are the ones that you know can really make a difference if you're prepared for. I'm also perfectly fine with folks if they want to make their own tourniquets for something that they just can't stop the bleeding with direct pressure. You know, tie an old T-shirt, something like that. Whatever folks have on hand is perfectly fine. The thought on tourniquets has kind of swung for a while. We weren't doing them at all because there was thought to be too much risk of, oh, you know, you're never going to get the limb to function again properly after you untie that tourniquet, but that seems not to be true. As long as you're able to get that person to definitive care and get that tourniquet untied and the bleeding stopped within a couple of hours, it seems to be an okay thing. So, yeah, I like some of those.
Jacob, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. We've had situations, I actually did a show on this, where a doc was talking about reattaching fingers and even arms and so forth. And let's say you cut your finger off or somebody cuts their finger off. What do you do with and you want to try to, you think, okay, maybe we can reattach this. What do you do with the limb or the finger or whatever on the way to the emergency room?
Well, let me first put in my advocacy for an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Be real careful. This is the time of year that we see these things. You know, people putting their hands in the stuck snowblower is kind of the classic one this time of year. But certainly any kind of farm equipment with blades on it, bandsaws, anything like that is certainly a risk. Be real, real careful with these sorts of things. You know, it can look safe with the snowblower is off, but all of a sudden you get it unjammed and all the blades start spinning all of a sudden. And this is where people get into trouble with these sorts of things. So, you know, don't put your fingers in anything that says don't put your fingers in here. Please save us, save and yourself with these sorts of injuries. You know, if this sort of thing does happen, time is of the essence here. You want to wrap it ideally in some moist gauze, something nice and clean, because you don't want this contaminated in any way. You don't want to freeze it, but to, you know, keep it coolish, you know, keep it on ice, something like that, and just get yourself to the emergency department as quick as you can. Unfortunately, a lot of these we are not able to reattach, especially fingers. You know, the blood vessels and the fingers are pretty darn small, and a lot of folks do end up losing fingers permanently from injuries like this, but something larger like a hand or an arm, you know, the better outcomes for sure are folks who come in right away.
And one of the we did talk about this a little bit, but if you keep an updated list of your medical issues, the medications or allergies you have, that's not a bad thing to have around either.
Yeah, I can't advocate for this enough. You know, we see a lot of folks who come into the emergency room and say, oh, you know, just take a look at the computer. That's where my medical problems are. That's where my list of medications is. And, you know, for the most part, that's okay. You know, we probably have a list that pretty much approximates what's going on. But, you know, I worry a little bit when folks say that, because, you know, nobody knows your medical problems and your medications better than you. And if you keep the most up-to-date list of medications, especially on hand, I'm constantly surprised by the number of changes that people have in their medication list that doesn't, it's not reflected in the computer. So, you know, be an advocate for your own health and, you know, keep your own list. It's tremendously helpful when folks just hand that notebook over. I say, oh my God, I know this is going to go well.
Dr. Schnapp, thank you so much for being with us. I hope we get to do this again. Appreciate you being here.
Absolutely, I'd love to.
Dr. Benjamin Schnapp, Assistant Professor and Assistant Emergency Medicine Residency Program Director at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Tomorrow we'll take a look at a book about how to fix a broken heart. Stay with us.